And so we continue the messy life of Jacob this week. Now, before we kick off in this, I want to start with two very important questions. And the first question is this: how many people here do yoga? Who does yoga? Go ahead, raise that hand up nice and high for everyone who's raising your hands. Take your other hand, match it together, bring it down into prayer hands. Very famous prayer hands, very famous among yoga people and Hollywood actors for some reason. I don't know. So yoga, anyone want to tell me, why do you do yoga? Those people who raise their hands, why do you do yoga? Because your knee hurts, okay? We've got some physical therapy in there, yes? Okay, so we've got some core action going on there, some mindfulness. I tell you, you know what? It has swept the nation out of just as a, if nothing else, a way just to take down the stress. Okay, now, so for all of you yoga people, I'm here to tell you this morning, there's actually a new level, and it is called, are you ready for this? Goat yoga. Goat yoga. Check this out. This is a thing. Okay, I'm serious. This, who's heard of goat yoga? Just so everyone knows, I'm not lying. Y'all, this is a thing, okay? No longer is yoga enough to bring down our stress levels. This started, perhaps unsurprisingly, in Oregon at a farm with a lady who has, she's got a goat farm and was doing some yoga one day, and as little kids, i.e. baby goats, are wont to do, they started jumping on top of her while she's doing her tabletop, and it brought her so much joy, she thought that this would be a great thing to export. This has gone around the nation, and in fact, next weekend, if you were thinking of doing goat yoga right here in the DFW Metroplex, you can sign up for goat yoga, except it is sold out. It is sold out here in the Metroplex, so that is how popular this is. Just stop and consider for a moment. We are now, to manage our stress levels, we are now to goat yoga. That is where we are as a society. Well, this morning, y'all, we're going to be talking a lot about goats, but unlike our friendly little kid up here, the story today is not going to be about goats relieving stress. In fact, the story today is going to be about goats creating a huge amount of stress. We're continuing our series on the messy life of Jacob, and this is what we've said. And for those of you who think that biblical characters are these flannel graph flat people who always make the right decision, you have not met Jacob. Okay, Jacob is a messy character, and a lot of the mess is because of the poor choices that he's making in his life. Choices not to trust God, but to grasp, to hold on with a chokehold grip onto what he wants, when he wants it, and how he wants it. That has been the story of Jacob. Now, this week we are going to be talking about a super obscure passage that a lot of times when people read, they go, that's in the Bible? Okay, this is where we are today. But I tell you, it's an important passage for us because it marks the journey from Jacob going from grasping to leaning. We're going to see now more than ever, we got glimpses of it at the end of last week, we're going to see more than ever the story of Jacob getting Laban's goats. We're going to see him start to trust and to lean on God. Now, here's the temptation. The temptation is for us to go, oh, okay, well then everything cleans up now, right? I mean, it's not gonna be messy anymore because he's making good choices. Here's the thing, it's just as messy. And you wanna know why? Because life is messy. Right, it's not just because Jacob is making poor choices, although that's a big contributing factor. The reality of it is, this just isn't a clean setup here. And Jacob, in this text, is going to start to feel this tension of God, that this, what God has told him was going to be true about him, to be a blessing, that he would be blessed and he would be a blessing. And this dream, this vision, this aspiration that starts to well up in his heart of, it's time to go home. It's time to leave Laban and it's time to go home. But he has a long way before he's ready to get there. Has anyone here ever felt that tension? I think God has put this desire in my heart, but it's a long way off in the horizon. Jacob's going to learn two very important lessons on standing in that gap. And I think they're going to be important for us this morning as well. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 30, starting in verse 25. Genesis chapter 30, starting in verse 25. And guys, if we can update the clock, that'd be great. Genesis chapter 30, starting in verse 25. Now, we just finished the passage where Jacob's wives are doing all this manipulation and they're creating all this stress for him and kids are being born. But the end result is this: Jacob's family grows exponentially. Now, keep in mind, in the ancient Near East, particularly in this sort of nomadic herdsman lifestyle, two pillars of wealth. One is family, the other is flocks, okay? They're not pulling out their Visa card to swipe for something. The flock that you had, you could put an equal sign next to that and say, this is your wealth. So God says, hey, I want you to know you're going to be a blessing. Well, that's pretty much going to entail a family, and it's going to entail some large flocks here. Last week, God provided a family. This week, we turn our attention to the topic of flocks. Jump in with me in Genesis chapter 30, verse 25. As Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and I'll be on my way. You know how much work I've done for you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please say, I've learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." He added, "Name your wages, and I'll pay them." Okay, here's what's happening. We are entering into that super awkward conversation that no one wants to have with their boss, right? This is the conversation where Jacob goes in, and in a fairly brisk and brusque way, he says, "Hey, Laban, it's been great here at Laban and Sons. We've gotten to see just margins go through the roof. We've had a wonderful time. It's been a good run, but I think I need to let you know it's time, and I think there's some greener pastures for me up ahead." And you get that moment where there's so much just tension in the air, you know, you can cut it with a knife. And Laban sits back. You know, he does his prayer hands and thinks about it for a moment. And he sits back and he goes, "You know, Jacob, I hear you. I hear you. But you know what I also hear, Jacob? I just hear, you know what? You're just so young. You've got so much ahead of you. And I tell you, I think that there is a lot here at Laban and Sons that still, I think this is the place for you in this season, right? I get where you want to be, but I'm telling you, I think this is right here." And you know part of what's going on in Laban's mind? Laban has been able to discern that a tremendous portion of his success has not been by the brilliance of Laban. It's in fact been by the blessing of God on Jacob's life. This is not that uncommon in the scripture. There are some people who God is just very uniquely working through that, frankly, wherever you put them, think of the story of Joseph, okay? Jacob's son. Really, wherever he was put, things just improved. God blessed. And the same is true with Jacob. And Jacob discerns it. And he goes, "Hey, Laban, I got to tell you, I've worked hard. Okay, I've worked hard. In fact, I've worked 14 years hard." And what he says under his breath is, "Seven of those, by the way, were because you cheated me. But you know what? 14 years, I've logged it." He had the little countdown app on his shepherding phone, like some of you have to your retirement day. You know, I mean, he was there 8 a.m., 14 years, to the money, knocking on that door. "Laban, it's time." Funny, even in the Hebrew, he doesn't use very polite language. He's very honest with his desires. "It's time for me to go." Does Laban want to leave? Not at all. Because Jacob equals money. Look what happens in verse 29. Jacob says to him, you know how I have worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you had before I came was increased greatly, and the Lord blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household? And look at verse 31. What shall I give you? Laban asked. So here's that awkward moment with your boss. It's been a great ride. I think there's greener pastures for me. Laban really tries to dissuade him and goes, hey, I know you've done a lot, and man, you've been a great asset to the company. We've had a couple shepherds leave in the past few months, and it's bad for morale to stack them on top of each other. I want you to stay. And Jacob just kind of puts his foot down and goes, hey, let me just be honest with what my desire is. It's not that it's been bad here, Laban, but when can I do something for myself? When can I start building my own family and not just making Laban's family great? And he's very frank, very upfront. By the way, this is different from the Jacob from earlier episodes, who's very deceptive about things, right? He'll tell you whatever you want to hear and then switch it on you. No, Jacob's coming in all honesty, saying, this is where I am, and this is an honest take on what I want, what I think God has for me. And so Laban thinks about it. He does his prayer hands. And he goes, okay, I tell you what, I understand you can't just take off into the desert with a couple of wives and a gaggle of kids. I mean, right, you got mouths to feed, okay? It's not like food is just popping up in the middle of the sand. You got to have more than just kids to get by. You got to have money of your own, right? That's where the flock part comes in. So here's what I do. If you think now is the time for you to go, I tell you what, just name what I owe you. Tell me, Jacob, what I, Laban, owe you. He's got his checkbook out, waiting with a little smile. Because he knows the answer is what? Zero. By contract, Laban owes Jacob nothing. What was the deal? 14 years for your wives. Doesn't say anything about goats. Doesn't say anything about sheep. So yeah, you got a family, but how are you going to feed them? Why don't you stay in the fold a little bit longer, Jacob? And he's sitting there. Just tell me how much I owe you. I'll sign the check right now. Look at what Jacob says. Drop down the second part of verse 31. Don't give me anything, Jacob replied. But if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all of your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, every spotted or speckled goat. They will be my wages. And my honesty will testify for me in the future. Whatever you check on my wages, you have paid me. Any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark colored, will be considered stolen. Agreed, said Laban. Let it be as you have said. The same day he removed all the male goats that were streaked or spotted, and all the speckled or spotted female goats, all that had white on them, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in the care of his sons. Then he put a three-day journey between himself and Jacob, while Jacob continued to tend the rest of Laban's flock. So they had that awkward conversation. They went to some form of a, hey, I want you to reconsider. Stay here because you are good for my business. You're helping us out. Laban really, he tries to pull Jacob in. Jacob says, no, God has put this on my heart. I'm going to head this way. He goes, okay, fine. What do you want? Jacob says, you know what I want from you? Nothing. Nothing right now, in any case. But here's the deal I'd like to strike, Uncle Laban. How about I get to keep all the future-born abnormal sheep and goats? Right? I'm going to do a children's church thing with you right now. What color are sheep? White. What color are goats? It's kind of a trick question. No one really knows, right? Brown or black, right? But you know what they're not typically? Sheep are not typically spotted or striped. Goats are not typically as spotted or striped. And so what Jacob says, he does this really interesting thing. He goes, here, I don't want what I haven't worked for, Laban. I'm not here to cheat you. I'm laying down my tools of deception. I'm laying down my tools of scheming, and I'll make you a deal. What you can pay me is any of the flock that is spotted or streaked from here on out, yet to be born, will be mine. And everything that's not will be yours. And I tell you what, to sweeten the deal, here's what I'm gonna do. I, Jacob, I'm gonna go through the flock and I'm gonna pick out everything that's spotted, everything that's striped, everything that's not monochromatic, and I'm going to send it away with you. So the only goats and sheep I am managing are pure colored animals. Now, I know most of us aren't in the farming business here, but let's do an equation in our mind. A white sheep, when a white mommy and daddy sheep love each other, what is the likely color of the baby sheep? White. So Jacob is really stacking the decks. Not only am I going to take the speckled, the spotted, the striped, but you can actually remove all of the existing speckled, spotted, and striped. I will only have pure colored animals, and whatever happens to be born that is not pure colored is mine. How likely is that? Punnett squares, third grade, anybody? Right? Recessive genes. You're going to get, I don't know, one out of a thousand. Who knows what the number is? But the thing is, it's not likely. And Laban sits back and he goes, boy, Jacob, you're putting me in a hard position. This is a tough call. It's a deal. Where do I sign? Okay, I mean, Jacob in his best used car salesman voice goes, boy, you're really fleecing me here, but I'm going to give it to you. No offense to used car salesmen in the room. And I tell you what, sign on the dotted line. So they sign. And just as a display of lack of trust on Laban's part, he goes, hey, Jacob, I appreciated you said you'd volunteer to remove all the speckled and spotted. I tell you what, you're busy. You got a big agenda today. Why don't you let me and my sons go and do that part, right? Because he doesn't trust Jacob. Let me make sure. And to top it off, I'm going to make a three-day journey between both flocks just to ensure nothing speckled, nothing spotted, nothing striped makes its way over to your flock that you're managing so that you can game the system. They sign on the dotted line and they walk away. Now, let's see what happens. And by the way, if I could give this next section a header, this is what I would call it. That's in the Bible? Okay, because this is one of those sections of just what? Pick up with me in verse 37. Of Genesis chapter 30. Jacob, however, took fresh cut branches from poplar, almonds, and plane trees and made white stripes on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all the watering troughs so that they would be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. When the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they mated in front of the branches and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. Jacob set apart the young of the flock by themselves, but made the rest face the streaked and dark-colored animals that belonged to Laban. Thus he made separate flocks for himself and did not put them with Laban's animals. Verse 41. Whenever the stronger females were in heat, Jacob would place the branches in the troughs in front of the animals so that they would mate near the branches. But if these animals were weak, he would not place them there. So the weak animals went to Laban and the strong ones to Jacob. In this way, the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and maidservants and men servants and camels and donkeys. Okay, now, for those of you who are tracking, yes, this is about goat mating and husbandry practices, okay? I really never felt like I would say that on a Sunday morning, but this is what we're talking about here today. This is what Jacob does. Remember, he's got a flock that is completely monochromatic, that are Laban's. He only gets to keep the offspring that are streaked, spotted, speckled, striped, something. Different than monochromatic. And so here's what he does. He takes branches of poplar type of wood or almond tree or plane trees, and he takes the stalks of it and he carves out little strips off of it. Now, if you're doing this, what does it make it look like? Striped. So he's taking striped logs, he's sticking it in the water where they're drinking, and whenever Kenny G is playing and it's that moment and the goats are off to the side, he goes and he sets the striped logs in front of them. And lo and behold, what happens? The offspring come out speckled, spotted, or striped. Now, I love these sections because it gives commentators such a, you know, frazzled mind on this. People ask the question, is that actually scientifically accurate? And some people theorize, and here's just a basic premise to start with. Sometimes we tend to think because it was a long time ago, people were stupid, right? Not like today. If it was a long time ago, you're stupid and you didn't really understand how things worked, you know, because we know so much better about breeding goats. Probably he had some precedent for whatever he was doing. This was his career, how, you know, by the way. But regardless, whether there is actually some people theorize there was a certain chemical from poplar that goes into the water, it doesn't really matter. Whether it was scientifically accurate or God just chose to superimpose blessing on a homeopathic breeding methodology, the end result is the same. God chose to work through some very creative, very hard work of Jacob to produce an inheritance for him. And so over time, he's doing this whole creative breeding method and speckled spot stripes. All of this is happening. Not only is he doing that with the flock in general, but he's doing it with the strongest of the flock. So he's not just getting numbers here. He's also getting the best animals, the best breeds that are going to be hardy for the journey ahead. And so this way, over time, right, this is not a week's time has passed. Over time, Jacob works in a very creative, surprisingly for Jacob, surprisingly honest way, and God chooses to bless that. And at the very end of the story, here's what we see, is that God has blessed him richly. Now, this doesn't have a happy bow in it. In fact, when the story continues, it gets really messy really fast when Jacob actually tries to leave. And in fact, he ends up fleeing because he's afraid of wrath from Laban. But here's a guy who for this whole time has been grasping. I'm going to chokehold this thing until I get what I want. And slowly in this text, we see Jacob, A, being very upfront with his desires. He's owning his desires. He's willing to work very hard, not deceive. And you know what he also does? He gives glory to God. And it's like his fingers come off the staff bit by bit, and he learns to do the hard work of leaning. You know what's so fascinating about this text? It's such an interesting balance. In theology, we'll say it's this balance between the sovereignty of God. God says, I will bless you. And human responsibility. Jacob got out there and he did some really creative work. How do you balance those two? God's sovereignty. I'm going to do this, regardless of human interference, human responsibility. You know, we read this, we see such an interesting thing, balance this coming from Jacob, where he goes, hey, you know the hard work that I have done for you. Hard work. I clocked in early, I clocked out late, I did my best. You know how hard I worked. And yet, what does he say immediately as he follows it? And it is God who has richly blessed you. It wasn't my hard work. It was my work. It wasn't my hard work. Where's the balance? I tell you, this is where we typically fall in one or two extremes here, right? When we get this thing, there's a desire in our hearts. There's this stirring that we feel like God has something ahead of us. And we're not sure what to think about. We get in this mix of, man, do I just let go and let God? I've got nothing to do with it. Or do I just go, God, thanks so much for putting the desire there. I tell you what, you can take a back seat. I'm just gonna hustle this here, right? It's all me, it's none of me. It's all God, it's none of God. I tell you, perhaps unsurprisingly, the balance is somewhere in the middle. But where exactly? That's hard to say. Now, are y'all ready? You didn't know you were coming here for this Sunday morning, but this is going to be a gift to y'all this morning. Trust me, okay? This is why I've been in seminary as long as I have. This morning, I'm going to tell you the answer to the balance between God's sovereignty and human responsibility. Are you ready? Wow, that was lame, people. Are you ready? Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right, you ready? It's messy. That's the answer. It all starts with God, but where do I come in? It's messy. It's very messy. Let me give you some examples. Desire in hearts. Man, God, I wish we had more kids. God, I wish we had kids. But it's been 2 years and we're not getting pregnant. What do you do? Do you sit back, you pray, let go and let God? Do you seek medical intervention? What do you do? Man, you get this diagnosis. You've got cancer. No one wants to hear that. You've got a certain percent chance if you do a very aggressive chemo. I mean, what do? Is God in control? Yes. Is God the healer? Yes. What's his part? What's my part? Man, God, I want this ministry. I want this job. And I feel stuck. What do? Do you feel the tension? What do you do when God has placed a desire in your heart and yet it seems so far away? Someone said this, right? It's a little unfair because Jacob actually knew what he was supposed to do, right? Anybody here, God visited you this week and told you what your weekly agenda should be? Anybody? I'd like to talk to you afterwards if it is. You can tell me your secret. Right, most of us, we sit here and go, but I'm not even sure. I tell you, I'm a whole mixed bag of what I want in life and what I think. God, have you put this on my heart? Have you not put this? How do you even start? Let me just give some very practical advice that actually comes from this story right here. Jacob living in this balance, okay, of this gap between what I think God has put in the desire of my heart and how it actually comes about. How do I not grasp, but do the hard work of leaning? Because it's no picnic. This is what he does. First of all, we see Jacob owns his desires. He just owns it, right? He knocks on Laban's door and he says this, hey, when can I do something for myself? Y'all, that's honesty. Have you ever tried to own your desires before God? Here's what we do in the church a lot of times. We either do one of two things, right? When a desire hits our heart, we become super impulsive and we go to fulfill it. Or we pretend that it doesn't exist. Well, God, that's not a good thing. Or I'm just going to wait here and we stuff it. Can I suggest something different? Maybe it would look like actually taking your desires before God and asking him to help sort them out. Because just because you have a desire doesn't mean it's right. Just because you have a dream doesn't mean it's what actually God has for you. Or maybe not at this time, but how are you supposed to even know? Maybe it just looks like coming and saying, God, I got a whole table full of desires here right now, and I'm going to have the guts to be honest about them and own them and say, God, this is true of my heart. And if it's a good desire from you and if it's your timing, would you help that to grow? And God, if it's not, because I tell y'all, the reality of it is, all right, are you ready for some real talk this morning? The reality of it is there are lots of desires in our heart that are just plain wrong and we know it. And we just pretend it's not even there. Well, what would it look like even to come before God with something you know is wrong and say, God, in all honesty, I want to sleep with that person's spouse. would you help take that desire out of my heart? Instead of just pretending it doesn't exist and looking the other way. Man, what does it look like to come before God and say, God, here's a whole litany of desires. Man, would you, I'm going to own them. Would you help me sort them out? And then the ones that you help grow and shape and you solidify in my heart, man, this is what I want you to do. And when I pray about that and I open my eyes and I look around and it didn't come true, Ed McMahon is not standing there knocking on the door with a giant check. Not that he has done that in how many years, I don't know. But like, it doesn't just magically happen. What do I do? Work. Work really hard. Discern the desire before God. Come just like Jacob did. Be honest about what the desire is. When can I do something for myself? Because God is stirring this in my heart. He's told me it. He's promised me it. He's confirming it. He's growing the desire. What am I supposed to do about this? Work. Work really hard. What that looks like for you? Work. And then you know what I love about the whole end of this story, right? Jacob has this desire. He owns it. He's honest about it. God continues to grow it in his heart. And he actually goes, instead of scheming, instead of the quick, easy win, he actually works. He takes all of his energy from grasping and puts his energy into the hard work of leaning on God. And he does all this creative breeding with goats and poplar branches and Kenny G soundtracks and whatever else he's got going on. And God uses that as the vehicle to bless him. And yet at the end of it all, what does Jacob say? Boy, this is all thanks to my brilliance. See these guns? Knocking it out, people. What does he say? It's God. Own your desires. Take them before God to vet. Work really hard. And then give all the praise and honor and glory to God, who's the source of the very life that we have, the breath that we breathe, and the strength that's in our very limbs. You know, as the worship team comes up, this is such an amazing text, not just because it's one of the most random passages I think you're going to read in the Bible, okay? This is how God divinely, uniquely is going to bring the gospel to the world by connecting the story of Jacob to this big overarching story of redemption, regardless of what schemes people are doing. But I tell you, it didn't just happen like that. And Jacob wakes up and he's got everything he ever dreamed of and he's looking at this perfect life. It was very messy. And for Jacob, it had to come down to two things. Are you ready for him? The first one is this: the belief that God is greater than scheming. God is greater than scheming. It is not just human effort that is going to make this thing happen. And regardless of Laban's scheming, regardless of the schemings of his wife, regardless of his own schemes, his own manipulations that he's done in his life, God will still do what he promised he would, because God is faithful. God is greater than scheming. And you know what else he held in this really weird, messy tension? God plus hard work equals blessing. Yes, God is over this whole thing and it is above and beyond the scheming, but it's not just that Jacob sits on his hand and goes, okay, God, drop the flock in front of me. Where's the dream? Where's the dream life? God called Jacob to work and to work hard, and God used that mechanism as a way to bless him and to bless others. Church, this morning, I want you to believe. I want to believe with all my heart as I look at the gap between, God, I think this is true of what you want from me. Man, God, I believe you're over scheming. And that's not just my effort that's going to get us there. God, I also believe that you can work through and bless my hard work to chase after that desire. And if I'm doing it wrong, let me know. But until then, I'm going to dig my hands in deep and chase after what you've put in front of me. Are you doing the hard work of leaning? Stand with us as we sing this morning in response. So today we've seen Jacob go from grasping to leaning. I tell you, churches, as all of us are sitting here, myself included, going, God, how can I lean on you? Believing that God is faithful. God is greater than scheming. And that God also chooses to use our hard work. You know what, for us this week, maybe this is what it looks like. Because I tell you, leaning on Jesus doesn't mean it's not messy. It sure was for Jacob. Leaning on Jesus doesn't mean it's hard and it's just a picnic. No, there's work involved. Maybe it looks like this, of just coming before God and going, God, here's my desires, and I can own them and say they're true of me. Would you help me sort them out? And then God, what you are lighting up in my heart, what's starting to glow and draw my attention, would you just let me know what part you want me to play? And God, I'll work towards it. Trusting that you're going to be the one who blesses. And giving God all the honor and the glory and the praise. Because as we have sang each week and as we continue to sing today, it is God who is the source of all blessing. And so we bring our desires before him and we do the hard work of leaning.